We've taken a break for the last couple of weeks. There's been some other things going on. But there's a Bible study group that meets on Tuesday nights at the rectory. And we've been reading very deeply and taking our time reading through the Gospel according to John. That's where today's Gospel lesson comes from. And it's been a wonderful part of our learning in reading from the Gospel according to John, how different John is from the other Gospels. The other three, Matthew, Mark, and Luke, are called the Synoptic Gospels because they look alike, that's what the word means. And they share not only that a narrative flow in common. Mark's the one who sort of tells the story first, and Luke and Matthew take that narrative flow and then embellish it, add their take on the resurrection before and after, and they have the birth narratives, and then they have other resurrection appearances as well on the end, too. John's Gospel has a different feeling altogether. And one of our learnings in this Bible study group is really to unlearn those expectations that come out of reading the other Gospels. Every Tuesday night, one of us, usually me, will say, this is not what the other Gospels say. You know, and it's hard to turn that off and to just let John be John. But John's got a very distinctive character to it. You know how it begins with that beautiful prologue, "In the beginning was the Word." And there is this level of magnificence, of grandeur, of presence, of size. I mean, there's so many different ways to talk about it. There is this way in which Jesus enters the story full blown, and he stays that way all the way through. And that he uses language about himself that is different than the way that he talks about himself in the other Gospels. Because it's in John's Gospel that he says, "In my Father's house are many mansions. If it were not so, I wouldn't have told you that. Because I'm the way, I'm the truth, I'm the life. Nobody gets there but by me. Nobody gets to the Father but through me." He doesn't talk that way in the other Gospels, but he does in John. In John's Gospel, he says, "I'm the good shepherd." And he takes credit for how he takes care of us. And he's real clear about it. And he's talking about himself when he says those things. In the other Gospels, he's always holding off. I don't know that it's necessarily humility, but he's always careful about that presentation aspect of who he is. Remember, every time something incredible would happen, every miracle, there'd be this rush of excitement about it. And he'd say this, "Shh, don't tell anybody." That doesn't happen in John's Gospel. Instead, he's big. And he talks about himself this way. He's confident, too. And part of what comes from that is this back and forth with the authorities, with those who challenge him every step of the way, with those who have a different take on what it means that the Messiah is coming. All those folks, people who have been living their lives bound by those Jewish rules and customs. And so he breaks those rules and is always bumping into their complaints. "You can't do that." And it just happens over and over and over again. Every time he does something miraculous in John's Gospel, what he has to do is to contend with those people who don't understand it and will not accept it for what it is. The best version of that is the man born blind. And he heals that blindness. And the guy can see. And for, what is it? It's a couple of chapters, isn't it? It just goes on. Their disbelief. "You couldn't have done this. How could this have happened? If he was born blind, there must be sin somewhere. You can't just restore his blindness and not do something about the punishment that is due him because it happened, you know, his parents must have done something if he was born blind." And it just goes on and on and on. And they keep asking this blind guy, "Tell us what happened." He says, "I don't know. This guy spat on some mud with spit and rubbed it on my eyes and washed it off, and now I can see." And 15 verses later, "Tell us what happened." "Well, I don't know. This guy just, you know, wiped my eyes off and I can see, you know." "Well, tell us what happened, you know." They just keep after him, and it's because they can't see. They're the blind ones, not him. Thomas is the last one of those people in John's Gospel that has to deal with not seeing. and the demand that belief puts on us, and it does, we want to see. And that's what he says. I need to see the scars. If you want me to think that somehow this person you saw, he says to his fellow disciples, if you want me to think that this person you saw was Jesus, he's going to have to prove it to me in order for me to accept it the way you guys have. Yeah, you know, I wasn't here last week, but I'm here now, and I need to see him. And Jesus appears the second time to the disciples, and he says, look. And what does Thomas do but to marvel at that? My Lord and my God, he says. Well done, by the way. My Lord and my God, he says. Because he's seeing not just who Jesus is now, but he's attaching it to who Jesus was before. And he sees backwards as much as he sees present and forward. And no wonder he says, oh my goodness. Oh my goodness, all that stuff that was going on, it was real. That's part of what he's seeing. He's doing that for us, though. Because what does Jesus respond to that moment with but to say, blessed are those who haven't seen this and yet believe. And he's talking about us now. Because we're not in the upper room. We get as close to it as we can every Sunday. But we're not there. And we didn't get to walk with Jesus back and forth across the Holy Land. We didn't get to be in that boat when he fell asleep. We didn't get to be distributors of a satisfying meal made from 5 loaves and 2 fish. We didn't get to do all that. We weren't there. We weren't at the cross when they nailed him to it. And the blood started to pour out of his hands and out of his feet and out of his side. We weren't there. We weren't there. But what Jesus says is, blessed are those who have not seen. John's all about this spiritual blindness and spiritual sightedness. And yet believe. Now, I've struggled most of my life with the way that being faithful was presented to me as a young Baptist child and then even through my life in college and beyond. Because belief always felt like to me that someone was demanding I give assent to a set of illogical principles. That's what belief was. You've got to accept this set of precepts that make no sense whatsoever, are impossible to realize in your daily life. You've got to accept those, and then you're in. Then you get counted as a believer. Only if you accept this set of principles, though. And some of them weren't real good biblical principles. They had been added on over time. Christians have a way of doing that, you know. We add stuff on over time. We used to not go to church all dressed up. But now I'm understanding something different. I think I see something different about belief now because of this story. There's something about resurrection that is part of how we get to believing. It's not the impossible thing that's held out there and we've just sort of got to give assent to it no matter what and go, okay, God, whatever you say. But there's something about resurrection, about Jesus being raised from the dead, that accomplishes a seeing for us, that helps get some seeing done for us. I don't know how it works, but I do know this, that if there is a God out there, a God who spent life with people in first century Palestine and confronted the religious authorities of the day, was crucified, and then was raised, that says something more, really, about who God is and how God works than it is about how incredible Jesus was. And I think that's something of what Thomas is also seeing, too. Because in order for Jesus to be the scarred one, and then the one who can come through a closed door and be fully present with Thomas and the disciples in that room on 8 days later, in order for that to happen, God's still got to be at work. I think that's part of what Thomas sees, is this God at work all the way through the story, living, dead, and raised. That's God at work. And so that our believing is trusting God's capacity to still be God and still be at work. No matter what happened to Jesus, God keeps being God. Well, I can move forward into that sort of world. Can't you? If God is still God, aren't you willing to just go, okay. Now, what do you want me to do next, God? He says, and we go, okay. That to me is as much faithfulness as accepting, without question, a set of illogical principles. Is trusting in the person of God. That person that we saw exhibited, and especially in the way that John's gospel presents him, as confident and capable and loving and present. Everything we see about Jesus in John's gospel is God being presented to us. No wonder Jesus says the things that he says. No wonder he acts the way he acts. His sense is that he is there as God's agent. We've used that word in our Bibles, an agency. That he is there authorized to show us God. He's the one. And what do we see when we look at Jesus in John's gospel? But that confidence and mercy and presence and consistency. He's always doing what God would be doing. Touch me, he says to Thomas. Put your hand in these scars. Now Thomas is lucky, and Jesus acknowledges that. You've got to see this, Thomas. Blessed are those who don't get to do this, but trust. I think that's what belief is. It's not the principles thing. It's believing that God is still God and moving into that every day toward God every day in every way. Baby steps are okay. It's Easter still. And I think that this way of living is exactly what Easter is supposed to be about. We should be rehearsing something on Sundays that we then live out Monday through Saturday. That's what church is. It's not what we're... It's not the highlight of the week. It may be. I'm not going to take that away from you. But I'm going to tell you this, that what we do here, we should be doing so that we do a better job out there with it. And what we are as the people of Easter are the people who confidently claim that God raised Jesus from the dead. We start church with that and we end church with that. Hallelujah, Christ is risen. The Lord is risen indeed. Hallelujah, Christ is risen. The Lord is risen indeed. We say it on the front and the back. That's what we're rehearsing for the world. We are those people who believe that God is still God. And doing God's stuff, not only in Jesus, but for us through him, that we are to participate in. And how do we participate? One step at a time. One step at a time. Yeah, I envy those folks that have a version of faithfulness that is much more glorious than baby steps. They're out there. You know those people. We all wish we believed like them. But there are some days when this is all I can muster. That's Easter. And if we get enough people doing it, you know what we call it? A parade. Hallelujah. Christ is risen. The Lord is risen.